are listening to Stories from Palestine podcast, a podcast that is recorded in Palestine and about Palestine. My name is Crystal. I am a Dutch woman who is married to a Palestinian, and I live with my husband and two children in Beit Safafa between Jerusalem and Bethlehem. I study the tour guide program at the Bethlehem Bible College, and I produce a weekly podcast about the history and cultural heritage of Palestine. If you want to get a weekly email reminder when a new episode is online, if you want to follow the podcast for photos and extra content on social media, or if you want to do a much appreciated donation on the Ko-fi platform, then click on the link in the show notes of this podcast. It's the last day of May 2021. And this is the last episode before the podcast break. But you don't have to stop your habit of tuning into Stories from Palestine on Mondays, because for the next 3 weeks, I will publish the episodes I made for Pax Palestine podcast with their consent. So you will have interesting episodes to listen to. And of course, you can listen back to older episodes that you haven't heard yet. There are 40 episodes since August last year. Maybe it's nice to give you a little update on the stats as well. In the coming weeks, the podcast will reach the fantastic number of 15,000 episode downloads. And this is the top 5 of most listened episodes. The episode about what was happening in Palestine 2 weeks ago is the most downloaded episode. And it's followed by the episode about Palestinian traditional dabka dance. The very first episode about Palestinian heirloom wheat, Abu Samra, holds the third place. And then the episodes about Christmas in Bethlehem and Sufism in Palestine were among the most popular episodes. The podcast had listeners from 108 countries, the top 4 being the United States, the Netherlands, the United Kingdom, and Palestine. So this episode coincides with the end of the last semester of the tour guiding program at the Bethlehem Bible College. This podcast is an outcome of my studies, and I feel it's just right to finish season 2 of the podcast with an episode about tourism in Palestine. So I asked my teacher Haytham to tell us a bit more about the tour guide program, and I joined a walk in Bethlehem with the tour guide students who are graduating with me to talk about their favorite sites and topics related to tourism and visiting Palestine. We are hoping that tourism will start to return to Palestine soon, and we are hopeful that people will be joining us again, maybe in October during the olive harvest. So if you are interested to come, then please send me an email or a message on Facebook or Instagram. You can find the details in the show notes, and we can work on individual requests for travel advice and for tips and connecting you to great tour guides. But also, if you would like to take part in an organized program, then I'm ready to work on something that can be as tailor-made as possible for those of you who want to explore Palestine, visit historical sites, learn about the cultural heritage, but also go on hikes, meet local people, eat Palestinian food, and of course, have an olive harvest experience. So don't hesitate to drop me a line, no strings attached, but when I know who wants to come, then I can see if I can come up with a program that people can participate in. And then I will be announcing that, and then anybody else who is interested can also sign up for that. We can email back and forth, and I know of several people already who want to explore Palestine, so I think we can work something out and do an amazing, affordable program, hopefully in the end of October. And to get you in the mood, let's talk to our teacher Haytham and some graduates of the Bethlehem Bible College tour guide program. Haytham, you are the program's coordinator and one of our very important teachers of the tour guide program, and we are forever grateful for everything you did to push us to this level of knowledge. that we have now after 2 years of studying with you. Haitham, for the listeners of the podcast, can you describe what someone has to do in Palestine to become a licensed tour guide?
To become a Palestinian tour guide, you need, of course, to fit into the requirements that are set by the Ministry of Tourism. First, your age must be at least 20. You should be a Palestinian with Palestinian ID. And also, you should study tour guiding in one of the recognized institutions by the Ministry of Tourism. And the Bethlehem Bible College, the tour guide program, is officially recognized by the Ministry of Tourism. Moreover than that, of course, you need to pass the ministry exam. It is an exam which we call the licensing exam, that when you succeed past that, you would become officially a tour guide. Now, of course, you need to understand that there are three different categories of Palestinian tour guide. You would either become a city tour guide, like, for example, we call it local category, such as Bethlehem category. That means you are only specialized in the area of Bethlehem, and which means you cannot take groups to the West Bank. You have the category two, which is the West Bank. That includes the 1967 borders of the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and Gaza Strip. And then thirdly, you have, of course, the hardest one, which is the general. It includes all historic Palestine, including from the north to the south and from the east to the west. So in terms, these are the three categories. Other categories, they are like sites. So you can become a tour guide only for the Nativity Church, for example, but it's not that much recommended. What I always recommend students, that they would at least choose the local category, and then by time they upgrade themselves and upgrade the category after they get the experience and the knowledge. Of course, we need to understand that each category requires certain amount of knowledge. So, for example, the Bethlehem category is not as much as wide as the West Bank, and the West Bank is not as much as wide as the general.
Yeah, I know, tons of work, because I chose to do the general category. And actually, it is a never-ending journey, because the more you know, the more you know that you don't know. And I'm the only one who chose to do the general category. And I think it's good to add here that in the Oslo agreements, it was agreed that only a small number of Palestinians from the West Bank who have a license as a general tour guide can actually work inside the Green Line and will be allowed by the Israeli Ministry of Tourism to work there. So this means that for many Palestinians who have the license, they are on a waiting list to be allowed to have the Israeli permit. So it doesn't make it very attractive for new tour guides to work hard for that general category. And most of them also, they don't have easy access to Jerusalem and the rest of Palestine because of the Israeli wall and the checkpoints and the permit system. So Haitham, what makes the Bible College such a unique place to study for the tour guide program?
Thank you for your question. I think this is important. I totally believe that the Bethlehem Bible College is an excellent place for training Palestinian tour guides. This would be for different reasons. If we go back in time, it is considered one of the oldest tour guiding programs to be established in Palestine. That was back in the year 1998. That means the Bethlehem Bible College has already the experience, the knowledge that knows how really to graduate a Palestinian tour guide in the best shape possible. So to think about the reasons, we can list the following. First of all, the academic quality. And I'm totally sure that you experienced that when you study the different courses that you have been taking, which are absolutely in a very wide range: history, archaeology, biblical sites, field trips, ethics of guiding, in addition to extra trainings. So I think the whole of this very high academic quality and very high academic standard had really helped to improve the program. Most of our courses are updated to the last excavations, to the last discoveries. Moreover than that, let's not forget the whole teaching language is in English, and I think this is something very important. I remember students would always get surprised when we would speak all in English, but then with time, we could see that how their English improved, how their vocabulary improved, and specifically the terminologies that they must be using with the groups in order to describe certain places or certain beliefs. In addition to that, we know that in the tour guiding ministry exam, our students had really put the high record. In the last exam, which took place in the 2018, the whole students of the class 2017 had really fully succeeded. 8 out of 8 had succeeded in the exam, and this is something extremely, extremely rare to happen. We're speaking about 0.01%, literally. In addition to that, think about the experts that we have in the program, the different professors, different experts that we actually host in the program. We have good agreements, for example, with the Applied Research Institute of Arij, where we could have part of their experts coming and implanting their experience to us, in addition to other different tourism organizations as well, like the Palestinian Heritage Trail, like the Alternative Tourism Group, and so on and forth. And we think that hosting such of these colleagues would really enrich the program. Moreover than that, I think that since we introduced the drama theater course with, thankfully, Al Hara Theater, and here I must really, really thank Al Hara Theater for their absolutely amazing work, we noticed how much the personality of the students changed, how much they are capable to stand in front of group easily, because I totally believe a tour guide is like a stage actor. He would need to act in front of the group, and he would need to feel the group being interested in the topic that is discussed, not being bored. So here you need to learn these kind of acting techniques. I would say also, we push students to the limit. We support students as much as we can, even if they are feeling tired or even if they don't believe they can do this step. We are the one who always keep encouraging them in order to change their way of thinking, to change their whole, we could say, overview of the program. And that's how we could see that after 2 years, students really change. To explain it more, how we saw that students before they enter the program were something, and after they finish the program, they are something else. They are a new personality. They have new information. They have new amazing perspective of life that they never ever thought about. So it's not only academic growing, but I would say spiritually growing. And this is something which is really amazing that we are able to have it as a result in only 2 years program. So this is something we are really proud of. So based on that, I would say that definitely the Bethlehem Bible College Tour Guiding Program is an amazing place. And if you allow me, please, Crystal, I can give you here you yourself as an example. Think about when you entered the program, how you were, and then after the program, think about this beautiful podcast that you are having, that mostly you are using lots of information that you have learned from the tour guiding program, and of course, then with other related things.
Oh, yes, absolutely. This podcast is a direct outcome of my studies. It actually worked both ways. I could share and repeat what I learned, but I also interviewed lots of people that added new knowledge and more details to what I already knew through the program. So Palestine has a lot of places to offer for pilgrims, and the most well-known sites are related to religion, like the Nativity Church and the Shepherd's Field and the Milk Grotto. But there are also many other places, including some UNESCO World Heritage Sites, or sites that are proposed to be on this list. Can you tell me something about these sites?
To think about it, first of all, we need to think, what is a World Heritage? You know, when you think about a site as a World Heritage, that means its value is so much special that it's becoming so much unique and transcend not only in the local context, but more into the international and universal level. That means the site that you have, because it's so much precious and its value is so much outstanding, anybody in the world would appreciate this site and would consider this site important because it's part of the human heritage, part of the human culture. And that's why we always say a World Heritage is based on acronym, we call it OUV, or an outstanding universal value. So I totally remember when you asked me this question, I remembered back 2009 when I worked with the Center for Cultural Heritage Preservation with my dear friend, may her soul rest in peace, Neda Al-Atrash, on inscribing the Church of Nativity on the World Heritage. And I must tell you, it was an absolutely challenging work. It's not easy at all to provide according with the UNESCO criteria and the UNESCO system to nominating a site on the World Heritage. You need to have something we call a nomination file. So you need to be really detailed in showing the UNESCO what really makes this site so much universal. Of course, other sites Palestine offers Batir, the beautiful cultural landscape. It's an amazing value of how the human and nature interact together. As we always say, a landscape is the combined work of man and nature. You have also Hebron, absolutely deserved to be on the World Heritage because of its religious value, architectural value, historical value. Other sites, of course, to be thought and hopefully in the future to be inscribed on the World Heritage. We could think about Jericho, the oldest city in the world. We could think about the monasteries in the Judean desert. You're speaking about Mar Saba Monastery, St. Theodosius Monastery, and then the whole monasteries in the whole of the desert. I think this is quite really unique and deserve to be in the future thought to be inscribed on the World Heritage. So as you can see, there are lots of amazing sites to be inscribed on the World Heritage. And I think it's something really amazing in Palestine. So to show that the Palestinian cultural heritage has really the level of an outstanding universal value culture that really is part of the worldwide human culture and the human civilization.
Yeah, so right now we have, in the state of Palestine, on the UNESCO list, the birthplace of Jesus, the Church of Nativity and the pilgrimage route, Bethlehem. We have Hebron, or in Arabic, Al-Khalil. And Palestine, land of olives and vines, the cultural landscape of southern Jerusalem, Batir. And of course, the old city of Jerusalem and its walls. And since last year, there are 13 sites on the tentative list that are considered for nomination. And these include, for example, Jericho, Tel el Sultan, ancient Jericho, Mount Gerizim and the Samaritans near to Nablus, and also the old town of Nablus, Sebastia, which is nearby excavations of a Roman city, the Qumran caves, and even two sites in the Gaza Strip. There, it's too much to talk about it now in detail. That's for future episodes. And a related question, when people come here with regular tours, they often focus on the Christian sites, but what are some of the sites that are related to the Muslim history and, for example, the Mamluk and the Ottoman period that are worth visiting?
Well, to think about it and seeing the sites from Islamic period, of course, you have really number of sites belonging to the Mamluk and Ottoman period. For example, the old towns. For example, when tourists come to Bethlehem and they would only see the Church of the Nativity, I wouldn't think that this would be a really full understanding of Bethlehem. Because in order to understand Bethlehem, in order to understand and visit this beautiful city, you need to go first through the pilgrimage route, through what is called today the Star Street. And when you walk through the Star Street, you will see the old town of Bethlehem. And when was the old town of Bethlehem established? At least back to around 1800. So when we think about 1800, that means we're talking about an Ottoman period. So that would be something really essential for groups if they would really want to enjoy Bethlehem, want to enjoy the Palestinian cultural heritage, is going through the old towns. Another example, you have, for example, Hebron, which unfortunately is living under very critical political condition. But in terms of history and urban planning, it's absolutely amazing example of Mamluk and Ottoman period. The way how the city is planned, the way how the layout is still preserved as it is from the Mamluk period. And I think this is something very much worth seeing. Also to think about another place to go, Nablus. Nablus is absolutely amazing with its old city that you feel yourself in the old cities of Damascus. When you go there, you would feel the sense, you would feel, even in terms of food, culture, the way of speaking, it's an absolutely amazing. So those also are from the Mamluk and Ottoman period. And I think it's very much worth, and I agree with you, it's not only when you come here, you need to see only the Christian sites. I would say when you come here, you need to see everything in order to understand everything. You need to get this all big wide perspective about a country by seeing all its relevant and related historical periods, starting from the old periods till middle periods and until modern ages. So I think by this, you could have a really excellent understanding.
And now the last question, Haitham. What is your personal favorite place where you will take your visitors and where you feel proud to be a Palestinian?
Well, without hesitation, I go to the Church of Nativity. It's an absolutely amazing place. And for me, it's my favorite place. It's the only place that there Jesus was born. So it's a place that has an amazing, outstanding value from its religious point of view, historical point of view, archaeological point of view, and even construction and planning point of view. It's a place that summarizes the whole history of Bethlehem. Think about Bethlehem. It has been always been a town, but when it was actually honored to be the birthplace of Jesus, and because afterwards a big construction, a basilica by Constantine was built there, I think this whole leveled Bethlehem to be an important city. Bethlehem and the Church of Nativity is very important to every person in Bethlehem. But because of this site and because of its value, it's now important for everybody in the world, because it is from that place, from this very humble place, that Christianity was born. So I would think about it also from a term of how the locals interacted with Bethlehem, how they interacted with the Church of Nativity. Think about the whole old town planning, the whole of the quarters and the neighborhoods, all of them being developed from the Church of the Nativity. So we could think about that the Church of Nativity is this in the center of Bethlehem, and then from that center, the whole life came around that place. So we are really, truly blessed to have the Church of Nativity, which was actually inscribed in 2012 on the UNESCO World Heritage List. And we are really, really very proud of this amazing, beautiful site that we have that's always blessing and protecting Bethlehem.
Thank you so much, Haitham, for this podcast interview and for all the hard work you did for us tour guide students in the past 2 years. You deserve a break.
Thank you so much, Christelle. I wish you all the best.
What follows next is a compilation of conversations, short interviews, and recordings I did with some of the students of the tour guide program. Some were recorded during our walk through Bethlehem, and the last two are from voice messages that I received later. I hope this will inspire you to come visit Palestine soon. Abunaji, you have been working as a taxi driver for many, many, many years, and then you studied the tour guide program at the Bethlehem Bible College. Can you tell me how much more did you learn during those 2 years than that you already knew? And what is your favorite place, and did that change from before you studied and after you studied?
You're right. Yes, I feel that I study everything, all the things. Actually, I haven't any knowledge comparing with my studies. You see, during 2 years, I became completely another person. Or you can call me tour guide. So I'm happy, actually, because I learn a lot about history, about religious sites, about political sites, about the Palestinian issue. And I feel that really I know a lot.
You've lived in Bethlehem for many decades, because you are in your 50s, I assume. Yeah, so how did you see Bethlehem change over time?
Actually, the people increasing, the number of the people increasing, the number of the cars increasing, you know. In the past, I have clients that they haven't, you know, they haven't transportation. They found me on the street and I travel with them to the place that they want. Nowadays, I saw them in the street with their cars. I say, hi, how are you? But without any benefit, you know. This is the changes, you know, comparing with this time and the past time.
And if you look at the social life, is there a change between maybe 20, 30 years ago and today?
If you want the truth, nowadays I feel so sad because the economic, it's getting bad. in the past time, it was better than today. The people, you see them more flexible, you know, in shopping, in the market. Nowadays, I think one person in the family, he work to hold the family, to bring or to stuff for hold the family. So the opportunities for the youth, especially, not so much today. And you see the poverty more and more increasing. And this is make me sad, actually, comparing with the past time. The past time, more flexible, more economic power. Nowadays, I feel so sorry for our people. You can feel the poverty, and you can see the poverty in the street when you walk through the markets and the streets. Yes.
Yeah, and we have definitely had a year and a half, 2 years now with the COVID pandemic of no tourism. So that also definitely affected your work a lot, because I guess before you had a lot of tourists in your car and now you have a lot of locals in your car. So if and when the tourism picks up again, where do you like to take people? If people are listening to this podcast and they are thinking in the future to come to Palestine, what are the top three places that you would take them?
First, to the desert, because actually it's represent the reliving or real life. So to the nature, like monasticism, you know, to feel the new life, because we passed through the pandemic, as you know, the coronavirus, all over the world, not only here. And we feel our life, it's became like we are in such curfew or whatever, you know, because of this pandemic. And many of people, they were broken and they were gave up for such a disease. And the frightened control all the things. So first the place, the desert, for sure. The desert, it's scary all the ages, since the Stone Age till now. And close to us here, to the east of Bethlehem, there is Khiratun Valley. And in this valley, it's famous three caves and monastery. Three caves called Al-Irq Al-Ahmar, second Kal'a, third Katafa. And Katafa, it's known for the humans here in Palestine, that the first place where the humanity in Palestine know the fire. Yeah. Yes, because they checking the two stones together and they get fire. And this is the first place. It's called Katafa. And this is not so far from Bethlehem to the east, like 7-8 kilometers. And that's it. From Herod's palace, like 2 kilometers to the south. Second place, I think, to Dead Sea, because it's important place. I can remember the story of the baptism of Jesus in Jordan River. This is one of the main resources to the Dead Sea, you know. So to feel that we are in new life. A new life after a bad situation.
You're being very symbolic. Can you also explain to the listeners why the Dead Sea is called the Dead Sea?
Nothing survived in it. Nothing survived at Dead Sea. Yes, at Dead Sea. No fish, no. Just if I went there, just me. I'm alive there because I float there. Salt, you know, because there isn't exist for the Dead Sea, actually. It's such a close lake. And the area surrounded the Dead Sea, it's limestone, or it's contain magnesium, calcium, potassium. So those elements, it's added the salty to the water.
Yeah, I mean, we all know those photos of people floating on the Dead Sea reading a newspaper. Yeah, so that's what you would do with them. And what's the third one?
The third one, a good restaurant.
Ah!
Yeah. A good restaurant to share with the tourists the typical Palestinian food, because it's very, very delicious.
Yeah.
Yes.
What is your favorite food?
Warak Dawali. Oh. Yes, the leaf of the grapes, you know. They put inside rice and meat. Very, very delicious. Yeah.
You know what? Unfortunately, most of the restaurants here, they don't really prepare that traditional food. They do barbecue and they do sandwiches and so on. Are there places where you can go really eat traditional home-cooked, like the mother type of food?
You must search and ask, actually, because it's you're right. I agree with you. It's not became a common food here. they're looking to have the Western food here. But if there is people from here immigrated to United States or to Latin America, over there they open a restaurant and they offer the people Palestinian food. Palestinian typical food. It's doing like that, actually, yeah.
You'd have to be invited by people. But it's easy to get invited here, right?
Yes, for sure. Yes. What's known about the Palestinian people, they were hosting people. They like the foreigner, the visitor, and they like to invite them to stay with them, to have a place to sleep also, whatever, without costing anything. This is a kind of hospitality for the Palestinian people. And it's known about the Palestinian people through the historical periods. Yes.
Naif, can I ask you, what is your favorite place? If you had visitors coming in and you had to take them somewhere, where would you take them?
Actually, I would take them to Lazarus tomb, because like this is the first site that I have ever visited. When I was a child, the school took us on a field trip, or like a trip. It was to Ramallah and Nablus, I think. And on the way, they took us to Lazarus tomb and they explained the site there. So I was excited to know the story. That was my first time visiting this place and knowing the story about this place.
Can you tell the podcast listeners who is Lazarus and where is this and what happened? What is the story?
Lazarus is one of the close friends of Jesus. He and his two sisters. Jesus spent time with them. He has close friendship with them. And one day, Jesus was in a different place in the desert. And the news came that Lazarus is ill. And he was so sad about that. And after a while, another message came that he has been dead. He was too sad of hearing this news. And after 4 days, he went to his tomb to visit him. The second he arrived, his sister came to him and said, "Where have you been? If you've been here, my brother wouldn't be dead now." And he said, "Don't worry, he's asleep, he will wake now." And he went directly to his tomb and he asked him to wake up, and then he was resurrected from death. All people was shocked. They know that he was dead for 4 days. And after like 4 days, he came back from dead. And he chose 4 days for a reason, because there was a tradition in the Jewish community that the soul will be around the body for 3 days. So if anyone resurrected after less than 3 days, that's normal because the soul will be around. But Jesus, in purpose, came after 4 days to show the people that this is a miracle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what if people want to visit it today, what do you see there?
You can see the modern church in the place of old Byzantine church. And there is a courtyard in the middle between the church and the tomb. And there is a mosque there too.
Yeah. So it is not very far from Jerusalem?
No, it's not too far. I think 1 kilometer from the Mount of Olives. So it's really close to there.
But is it easy to reach from Jerusalem?
No, it's not. The borders now are like closing the way. You have to turn all the way around to reach Jerusalem. It took you like, back in time, it used to take like with a donkey or something about 10 to 15 minutes at most. Now with cars, you need about 25 minutes, 20 to 25 minutes with cars.
And that is because they built the wall between Jerusalem and this place in Azariah.
That's right. They built like wall to separate the Azariah area from Jerusalem area, to separate the West Bank.
Yeah, well, let's see. If people are coming here and they want to go to this place to see the Lazarus tomb, they can contact with Naif, right?
Yeah, sure, for sure. You're more than welcome to join us.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Linda, you have been with us in the tour guide program for the past 2 years, and we have done a lot of things together. We learned so much. But you do have a speciality that none of us has, and that is that you paint icons. And we are here at the Icon Center in Bethlehem. Can you tell us a little bit, what is an icon? How do you make an icon? Which materials do you use?
Yes. Well, an icon, we can say it's an open window into the heaven, like this icon, the Virgin Mary. When I pray in front of the Virgin Mary and in front of the Jesus child, it feels like I am opened to the sky. It's like a line of connection with the saints up in heaven. So what materials do we use for the painting icons? First, we need a board. you can use a specific kind of wood. Then if I want to make it the real one, the original one, it should be from the rabbit glue first. It's prepared in a specific way. And then we need special cloths, white cloths. And then we prepare the gesso. The gesso, we can use a chemical gesso, and we can use the shock powder, which is all natural. It should be the icon, it should be all natural, the original one. It needs about 10 to 12 layers, very thin layers, very, very thin layers. And then we have to burnish it with special kinds of glass paper. We use special numbers from the glass paper, from the harsh till the very smooth or very soft, so as to be like a glass. Very smooth it should be, so as the natural colors would look like transparent. You can see from the under until the above. Something like you from inside. What do you feel from inside? It's getting up. It's getting to show up. We choose any saint or the Virgin Mary or Jesus, or any saint or any topic, like the Annunciation maybe, or it could be the Transfiguration. Then we copy it into the gesso, and then we start to prepare the colors. The colors are the most important. We can use the original colors, which is tempera, which is very, very, very expensive. And that's what sometimes the icons are very expensive, and it takes time. It takes time. It takes a lot of time. Then the colors should be all from the earth, could be from the plants, it could be from a specific kind of stones. It depends on the artist, what he feels from inside shows outside.
And is this a very specific Palestinian way of making art or skill, or is this something that's done all over the world? Like, what's the relationship with Palestine?
No, it's the first painter who painted an icon was whom? You don't know? Saint Luke. Yes, Saint Luke, he is a painter, icon painter, yes, iconographer was. He is the first one who painted Virgin Mary, and it is existed till now, till right now, where at the Sepulchre Church. Yes, Saint Luke, he was the first icon painter or an iconographer, yes. Anyone could be an icon painter. It's not specific for any nationality, or it's international.
Yeah. And here we are in an icon school. Yeah. Can you say a few words about that?
There was a professor, he was called Ian, but now he's left. And now there are an artist who they are from the young artists from Bethlehem. They encourage them to come and to do not just icons, but also classic art.
It's an icon school where people can learn how to make icons and classic art.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Caroline, we just walked into a beautiful small area, what we call a hosh here. It's a small neighborhood, and we walked under a few beautiful arches. And now we are facing a place that just looks like I'm in maybe in Italy.
It is like a hostel for tourists. We have here the old inscription found in Bethlehem. It was before for Hrezat family. Then when Syrian people came from Turkey, which was Constantinople before, they came here and they buy this area. They live in it for a long time and they stayed here, and they are part now of the Bethlehem society.
In Palestine, there are actually quite a few different Christian denominations. Can you say something about that?
We have more than a denomination here, the Catholic, Roman Catholic, Syrian, Rum Orthodox, and they become separated maybe 1054 AD. Yeah. Become different on small issues, but it become a big denomination. The three more major one is the Catholic, the Orthodox, and the maybe Syrian a little bit only. They don't have too much, but they have a new church they have on this stairs nearby. They built it in the 1920-25.
And what is your denomination?
I have a collection of denominations. I don't believe in them, but I can pray in all of them. My family is Catholic. My husband were Orthodox. So I am a mix of... I go to a Coptic.
You go to the Coptics. Okay, thank you.
ما بكاش تدخل جوا ولا خلاص
صور فيديو
صغير محمد. As we are walking here, can you tell me how did you see your last 2 years studying at the Bible College? How do you see yourself from 2 years ago until now?
I want to say only one word: grateful. I am grateful for everything. I am grateful for this program, and I am grateful especially for you. You led us all the way how to make stories. And that's, I think, what's matter for the tourists is to hear a story. That's what sticks in their minds. We as a Palestinians, not just a people, random people who live here. We are a people with a history, with a culture, with a past. We are rooted in this land. We have a story. And thanks to you, now I can tell my story in a way that attracts people to stand up for our case, for our struggling for independence. As a Palestinians, we never got our independent state. We always was under occupation, different occupations, now under Israeli occupation. Because this land is rich and fulfilled with religions, diversity of cultures. You can see Judaism, Christianity, Muslims. All live here together in peace. I mean, before 1948, and what we call Nakba, or what the Israelis on the other side of Palestine call the Jewish independent state, Israel. If there's something I should say, I want to say we are all ambassadors, you know, to this country. You don't have to work on government to deliver your story. You don't have to work with local organizations to deliver your story. We all represent our country as a people here. I work at a souvenir shop where I meet so many people, and I always see each one of these tourists as an opportunity to get our freedom. Because when you tell your story, the Palestinians' story, from local Palestinian perspective, you like building a stone on other stone to build this house. After maybe many years, but eventually we will get a state. And every stone, every Palestinian build on the other stone, generation after generations, that what eventually will get this house built. And this house is our country, is Palestine. It's what we deserve. We never got this, but we will get it. We will make it. All these sacrifices from thousands of martyrs, prisoners in Israeli prisons should eventually pay.
Thank you, Mohammed. That is actually a beautiful way of looking at the history of Palestine, saying that all the stones that were built on top of each other, which is basically all the people, all the civilizations, that lived here over all those hundreds, even thousands years of time, they built what Palestine is now. That's the civilization we have today.
Yes, all the week. Yeah, salat. We'll see you
later. Bye.
Bye.
Mohammed, what is your favorite place in Palestine? Where would you take a tourist?
My favorite place is a necropolis, was found a few years ago, close to my village, Tokoa. This necropolis was found accidentally while there was some construction works. To explain necropolis concept is a complex of underground tombs or cemeteries. So this location has around 80 to 100 tombs. It dates to the Bronze Age period, that's gonna be around 3300 BC, before Jesus born. If we talk about like 5,000 years ago. And who lived in Palestine at that time actually is the Canaanite, whom we are, the Palestinians now, their ancestors. And the way they buried their deceased, our dead persons, loved ones, is very unique. When I think about it, explains the mystery of death is not, let's say, a modern question or issue. It's very, very old, thousands of years issue. People always thought about the afterlife of death and what happened after the one is dead. So these underground cemeteries, how they made it, they first dug the surface of the rock, limestone rocks, and make a shaft around our square shafts where they dig 2 to 3 meters. Then they start widening it to make chambers, burial chambers. And there, when someone died, they would go down by a means of ropes and take down the bodies, put it on the chamber, and there also they would put food and clothes belongs to this person, and butteries, perfume also they found in this cemetery, perfume containers, and hand axes, you know, hand axe, and spears from bronze, made out of bronze. When this deceased person, what they believe, he will wake up in the other life after his death, immediately. He will use this stuff in his new life. So this is what we call a continuous of life. And this is so similar to the pharaohs who lived in Egypt in the pyramids, who buried their deceased ones this same way. And this seeking, this people wasn't just an Iran people. They was smart. They understood life. They loved each other. Mystery of death is a continuous question, and you just believe in it. You never understand it. Yes. I hope all we get long life and happy life, because eventually we will die, but what's matter is what we give, what we made in our lifetime, you know.
Amir, as we are walking here in Bethlehem today on our basically last day of the semester, I think that the only thing we still have to do is the first aid course. What did you learn in this year? What is something that you would like to share with people, or what would be a place that you would like to tell people about?
As we are in front of the Nativity Church right now, so this is the Alpha place, means the birth of the Christ. This is where he started. And from the Alpha to the Omega, where it's Jerusalem, where the Jesus Christ ended, his earthly ministry ended. Between the Alpha and the Omega, we got all Palestine, you know. So in Nazareth, Christ has his childhood. In Jenin, Christ was there, you know, Jericho, basically whole of Palestine. He walked through it. So, I mean, when you speak of the Christ, Jesus, I mean, he's the figure that immediately you would think when you speak of Palestine. So he's the hero of the Christians here, you know, and he's the hero of many people around the world, you know. Christianity is the number one religion, as we know. But nonetheless, you know, I want to point out to the recent history, what's happening right now in Palestine. So I want to remember one person in that regard. His name is Edward Said. And why I speak of Edward Said? Well, he's a man that wrote the great book of Orientalism. It's a book in the 70s, he wrote it, and it spoke about how the West see the East, how the Occident world see the Orient world. Why I speak of him? We see today what's happening on the social media, that how the story of the Palestinians are being hidden and being attacked, as systematically we can see pages, websites being deleted because they just speak of Palestinians and their struggle, which is, let's be particular about it and specific. It's not a conflict. It's a struggle. It's a liberation movement by the Palestinians against a colonialist case. What has it to do with Edward Said? Well, when Edward Said wrote The Orientalism, he spoke about the recent history of Palestine in particular and the Arab world. And he was a person that he, back in the 1948, he was displaced. He became a refugee. And he was lucky that he, later in his life, he managed to study the United States and live most of his life there. In that regard, he wrote the book Orientalism, in which he spoke of the recent history in the way he understood how the Occident world see the Orient. They saw us like the savages. It's very detailed. It's a book I would I would like a foreigner to read it and come here, you know, and see things. It will open your eyes. You know, you can relate to that. For me, Edward Said is like the second Paul, the Apostle Paul. Why? If we go back 2,000 years ago, Paul, a Jewish from Palestine, that he preached Christianity after he became... it wasn't Christianity, the followers of the Christ. He preached the message of the Christ, the good news of the Christ, as we are in front of Nativity Church, you know. So he preached the good news within the Roman Empire, outside Palestine. So he knew the Romans, he understood the Romans, and he wrote for the Roman audience. And due to that, Paul was considered as the number one threat, danger, and he was basically the preacher of terrorism to the Roman Empire. He was persecuted, imprisoned, and later he was executed. Why I would say the story of Paul? Because similar to Edward Said. Edward Said, he understood the Americans, not just the Americans, the Westerns in general. And when he wrote the book of Orientalism and other books, he was immediately called the professor of terror. Well, why would you call a man that he never held an arm and he just wrote a book in which he is tied to the history of the Arab world and particularly Palestine, and he wrote it in the words, in the phrases that the West understand, and what happened to him through what he saw, what he experienced. I mean, today we have Facebook, all these social media. We spread our story and still we are being systematically, our story being hidden, being deleted. So Edward Said, I advise anybody to read for him. Don't believe it. Come here and see. Just read for him first.
So if you want to come to Palestine, read some of the books of Edward Said and then contact us and have a tour with Amir to see everything in real. Yeah. Fadi, we finished 2 years of tour guiding program at the Bethlehem Bible College. How do you feel?
I have two answers. I'm happy and sad at the same time, because I'm happy because خلاص, it's enough studying for 2 years, because it's very hard with our work. You study a lot. You need a long time for studying. And I'm sad because I will miss my colleagues in the college. And I will miss my teachers. Really, it was an amazing experience in the Bible College. We had great lectures with great professors. So I would like to thank all of you in the Bible College. And really, we appreciate all your efforts you did for us.
Thank you, Fadi. But Fadi, now we are so curious to know, if you had visitors from abroad and you wanted to show them something, not the Nativity Church and not the places that all the tourists go to, where would you take them? What is one of your favorite places in Palestine? What makes you proud to be Palestinian?
You know, I like a lot of places. For me, I like to go to Battir for that natural place where you can walk, where you can experience the environment. Also, I like the Waldorf Hotel, where you can show some politics issues, where you can show them the worst view ever in the world at the wall. So maybe these two places are very unique, extra to the Church of the Nativity.
And my last question is, I know that you are now the director of a school in Jerusalem. Do you see yourself working in tourism anytime soon?
You know, for me, I think I will work in tourism in my weekend at the beginning. But after that, maybe I will take more tours. But it depends, because, you know, Palestine, it's unstable place. The economic things, it's not stable at all. So it's difficult for me to leave my work to work just in tourism. Because tourism, it's not stable. And you saw what happened. Corona 1 year after that, a war. And we're still waiting for the tourism and the tourists to come to Palestine and Bethlehem.
Yeah, we truly hope that the world will open up again and that we can all work as tour guides now that we have this qualification. Danny, we are in the end of our tour guide program, but you were working already, taking people around, taking them on tours before you started this program. So you had that experience and you already knew where to take people and what to tell them. What is it that you say, wow, that's something I really learned new during this program? And would there now be other places where you would take people that you hadn't known about before?
Yes, actually, I'm very glad that I finished this wonderful program. We learned lots of things, even though I was kind of a semi-tour guide before, but now we hope to do the ministry exam soon. Yeah, about all the locations that I used to take people to, they were important and lots of experience and knowledge about the actual holy sites in Bethlehem. Now, thinking about the question, I would take people more outside of the city, because the normal thing that people like, my favorite place before, it used to be the Banksy Hotel, which is extremely a must go to everyone that comes to Bethlehem, because you will learn a lot about the history, political, cultural, everything of what is happening in Palestine. The Banksy Hotel is a must go. I would take people to a hike. I would call it a Marsaba hike. And that's why in the 3rd and 4th century, Marsaba, when he came here, he built a tower in the year 483. And that was one of the first places he lived as a hermit. And the idea here is about the desert. The desert is a city. People who do this vow to commit to leave all the desires of this world and to live in a desert away from everybody, but yet being in connection to God. And I did that before, but I think that when I think about it more, there is more enjoyable things to know, more knowledge about the desert and about the Jerusalem wilderness that is from, let's say, Jerusalem, Bethlehem, and Hebron area toward the Jordan River and the Dead Sea. That is a wonderful place to go, and a short hike could be for an hour. A longer hike will be for 3 to 4 hours. And I think that would be a change for people that come and find everything, visit all places in the city.
Hey, and if you had people who wanted to know more about Palestinian culture, traditions, to meet people, to eat the Palestinian food, what would you let them do? How would you spend the day with them?
Well, actually, walking in the old city of Bethlehem is quite an experience. So from where the bus would drop them off from Jerusalem to Bethlehem, and from there, from that location, to walk with them through the old city, the old market, there's lots of traditional food. Mostly all people know about hummus and falafel, shawarma, and there is lots of other things that as well people can see and try.
What would be the sweet treat that you would give people to eat?
Well, actually, that would be my first answer to the first question, to take them to Nablus to eat the best kenafe in Nablus. The best kenafe is the sweet dessert made from goat cheese with a dough and red topping, and it's extremely good.
We all agree, yeah?
Yeah, for sure, yes. About kenafe, I cannot resist.
I think, by the way, we found something that all Palestinians may be able to agree on, which is that kenafe is delicious. Oh no, Amir not!
if you want diabetes, I mean, go for kenafe, you know.
Every site in Palestine has a beautiful story. Because we all know the historical sequence that Palestine had passed through. The best site that I really enjoyed while I'm studying it is Qumran. It's best known as the place where the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered. It's located between Jerusalem and Dead Sea, but sadly it missed by many tourists, and it tells an interesting historic story and offers some amazing opportunities for adventure sports. So Qumran was established during the Hellenistic period and discovered multi-level structure, reservoirs, pottery clients, and houses. It was during the Hellenistic period that the Essenes Jewish sects settled there, isolating themselves from big city life and living as a communal monastery-like community. The sect is thought to have eaten communal meals, studied sacred scriptures for most of the night, taking a daily ritual path, practice celibacy, and they had their own calendar. How did we get this information from? As I mentioned first, this place is none of the Dead Sea Scrolls. The scholars have managed to get a clear picture of communities' ways and lives and beliefs. How did they discover the scriptures? In 1947, local Bedouins discovered a clay jars containing seven scrolls in a cave in Qumran. The ancient scrolls were sold to antiquity dealers, and after changing hands several times, they reached scholars who could accurately evaluate the age and the value of the scrolls. The scrolls, including the oldest non-existing copy of the Old Testament, the first five books of Moses, and it's written in Hebrew, Aramaic, Greek, and Nabataean.
First of all, I am from Bethlehem. I love my hometown, but the best place that I love, and I'm in love with, is the old city of Jerusalem. It is a breathtaking place, a holy place, full of life from centuries. There you can encounter all the world in just the souk of Al-Attarin by entering the Damascus Gate. You can meet Muslims, Jews, Christians in one street. In front of you, you can see the history and live it again and again. In just a glance of a moment, you return back in time. You can feel it in your heart and see it by your own eyes, touch it in every sense, and say, how could it be still there, the feeling of holiness, the feeling of peace, and that someone really special one day passed by these streets, walked, prayed, and died and resurrected for delivering the message of love. As for me, I worked from 4 years in the city of Jerusalem. I knew nothing before in details, but now I learned the history from the archaeological point of view, spiritual, and the history of it. Learning the story of Jerusalem helped me to have a deeper understanding of the reality we are living nowadays and fill the gaps and questions I had before. I teach my students about their city and its history to see it in a different way as I see it. I appreciate every step and every walk because it's a holy and peaceful in every sense. You can read about it and in any book or guide or listen to this broadcast or any broadcast about Jerusalem, which, by the way, Crystal, your broadcast is wonderful, but living it is different. Walking through its small alley, smelling history, visiting its holy place, just being there in the heart of the old city of Jerusalem can steal your heart. And you know, you will tell yourself, now it all makes sense to me. If you come once, you will come again and again. It is an addiction in a positive way, of course. I invite you to live it, not just visit it. Maybe you will understand why people from the time of Canaanites are still fighting to be present here in the Holy Land.
Thank you, Georgette. Very wise words to end this episode with. And remember, if you are thinking about coming to Palestine this fall or the winter, then don't hesitate to reach out to me. It would be great to start working on a program for the podcast listeners to visit some fantastic places in Palestine and to have some real on-the-ground experience. I'm going to start packing my bags now for the first trip to the Netherlands in 18 months. The next weeks, you can listen to the episodes I published for Pax Palestine here on Stories from Palestine podcast. So just tune in again next week, Monday. I may be a bit silent on social media coming weeks because I really need a break and some time with my family, but you will hear from me again in July with a special summer edition brought to you from the Netherlands, but still about Palestine and likely with Palestinians in the Netherlands. All the best. Ma salama.